Good morning, early birds. You've caught The Worm, a podcast from Yellowstone Public Radio, rounding up reporting from our newsroom and Montana Public Radio. Today we have stories about the bison hunt in Yellowstone National Park, expanded background checks to private gun sales, and the lockdown at Senior High School in Billings. It's Wednesday, October 23rd. I'm your host, Jess Sheldahl. U.S. Census hiring week kicked off Monday. Across the country, that means the launch of targeted television ads and posters aimed at getting people to apply for the 500,000 temporary jobs the Census Bureau needs to fill before next spring. In Montana, the U.S. Census Bureau is hiring up to 4,500 Montanans to count the state's population in the upcoming 2020 census. The census will determine how much money Montana gets to pay for highways, school lunches, Medicare, and more. The census count will also decide whether or not Montana will get another representative to Congress.
It's important to have Montanans in these jobs because a neighbor talking to a neighbor about the importance of the census is much more effective than hearing that message from a stranger or through a TV ad, for example.
That's Emily Ritter Saunders, a spokesperson for the Montana Department of Commerce, one of the agencies overseeing Montana's census efforts. Nearly 500 Montanans were already hired this fall to verify addresses before the census is mailed out. Some of those workers will be rehired for jobs in the spring, going door to door, but thousands more applicants are still needed in the state.
Truly, it impacts many different aspects of life here in the state.
Saunders says every person missed in the count in Montana is a loss of $20,000 to the state in federal funds. Door-to-door visits by census workers are critical in getting the once-in-a-decade count right. According to the Census Bureau, fewer than 7 in 10 households plan to take part in the upcoming census. But census workers who make house visits help ensure that even when people don't mail the census back in, they still get counted. Saunders says census workers are needed in every corner of the state. Though the census is still months away, anyone interested should apply now, because the federal hiring process can take up to 3 months. A lawsuit filed in federal court Monday is challenging a long-contested bison hunt near Yellowstone National Park. Montana Public Radio's Corn Cates Carney reports.
A group of Gardner residents says the annual winter bison hunt just north of the park is unsafe for property owners, hunters, and tourists. The suit filed in the District of Columbia against the National Park Service and U.S. Forest Service asks a federal judge to stop the hunt scheduled to start in mid-November. Jared Pettinato is the attorney for Neighbors Against Bison Slaughter.
They're worried about this hunt in a very concentrated area where the bison, as soon as they step off of Yellowstone National Park land onto Forest Service land, the hunters gun them down.
The hunt takes place in Beatty Gulch, a roughly half-square-mile route that bottlenecks the path of migrating bison. Pettinato says the lawsuit aims at forcing federal agencies to redesign the hunt and move it further away from private residences in the gulch.
And that could mean allowing bison to roam farther from where they are.
The dense hunting of bison in the area has long worried some locals, but not all are endorsing the lawsuit challenging the hunt. Nathan Varley lives in Gardner and is the president of the Bear Creek Council, a conservation group in the town. Varley says he doesn't want the lawsuit to undermine conversations about how to improve the hunt.
I am concerned that the partners may be forced into positions that they may not have taken under the current scenario with just dialogue and kind of working within the system.
Those partners include state, federal, and tribal nations that make up the Interagency Bison Management Plan, a multi-agency effort to guide bison management in and around Yellowstone National Park. Tribal nations have treaty rights to hunt in Montana, and tribal hunts make up a large portion of the winter bison hunt in the area. Marna Daly with the Custer-Gallatin National Forest says the lawsuit could impact tribal hunts. Daly says the Interagency Bison Management Plan group has worked to make the hunt safe.
We have area closures in place to ensure safe shooting distances, and certainly enforce the Custer Gallatin National Forest Food Storage Order. And those are just a few examples.
According to attorney Jared Pettinato, Neighbors Against Bison Slaughter formed in part to sue over the hunt. He declined to identify the group's members for privacy reasons. I'm Corin Cates Carney, Montana Public Radio News.
Kalispell Regional Healthcare announced yesterday that an email data breach this summer may have exposed the personal and private healthcare information of nearly 130,000 of its patients. Montana Public Radio's Aaron Bolton has more.
Information exchanged in emails with KRH staff, such as names, addresses, and some social security numbers, as well as personal medical information, could have been accessed as early as May 24th. KRH spokesperson Melody Sharpton says the breach was discovered in late August. She says the company waited until a forensic investigation was done to find what specific information was accessed before notifying patients.
We discovered that multiple employees had provided their email credentials to unauthorized malicious criminals by way of a phishing scam.
Sharpton says federal authorities were immediately notified and that KRH hired a digital forensic firm to conduct the investigation. Sharpton says the investigation into the incident concluded last week and says there are no signs the information has been misused. KRH sent letters out to affected patients Tuesday.
Different information may have evolved for each person, but all notified individuals are being offered complimentary fraud consultation and identity theft restoration services. The notification letters may also offer affected individuals 12 months of complimentary monitoring services.
The hospital also opened a dedicated call center to help patients sign up for those services and answer any questions they may have. Aaron Bolton, Montana Public Radio News.
The Montana Supreme Court yesterday ruled a Missoula ordinance that would have expanded background checks to private gun sales violates state law. The opinion overturns a lower court ruling and sides with Attorney General Tim Fox. Montana Public Radio's Edward O'Brien reports.
The state high court's opinion is the latest step in the fight over a 2016 Missoula ordinance that never went into effect that would have required background checks on gun purchases from unlicensed sellers. According to the Associated Press, it was the only rule of its kind in the state. Months after the city passed the ordinance, Attorney General Fox ordered it was prohibited by state law. In the Montana Supreme Court opinion released Tuesday, Justice Jim Rice agreed, writing that Missoula and the order from the district court in Missoula County failed to account for the state's full regulatory power over firearms. The opinion says that state law specifically restricts local government's regulation of guns on this issue, and that, quote, is a limitation on Missoula's self-governing powers, end quote. In a written statement, Fox said he was confident the Supreme Court would uphold his office's position, writing, quote, Missoula's ordinance is unenforceable. The rule of law and Montana's constitution matter, end quote. Missoula City Council President Brian Von Losberg, the ordinance's original sponsor, says he respects the court's decision, but adds it's deeply disappointing.
Missoula, like the rest of Montana, has real issues with suicide and domestic partner violence and homicides, and you know, the background check system is a proven tool to help on those fronts. It's disappointing that we won't have the opportunity to employ that in our community.
Von Losberg says he hopes the debate surrounding the issue at least raised awareness that a voluntary background check system is already available for private firearms transfers.
One takeaway is that more people will be aware that that's a tool that they can use for private transfers, regardless of it being required or not by ordinance, and that more folks will use that system.
When asked by Montana Public Radio if Tuesday's ruling spelled the ordinance's end, he replied the legislature could pick up the baton. He also acknowledged that would be extremely unlikely. Republicans control both legislative chambers in a state widely considered to have some of the least restrictive gun laws in the nation. Edward O'Brien, Montana Public Radio.
A report of a possible gun threat at Billings Senior High School yesterday put the school on lockdown and drew a massive police response, which highlighted challenges in communication and resources. Kayla DeRoche reports on the second school incident in Montana in 2 weeks that ended with no one harmed.
Soon after the lockdown started, a quarter past noon, Billings Senior High School parents received a robocall alerting them to a possible weapon on the campus. Some parents parked outside the school to wait, like Tasha Whitebloom, who said her teenage children had been texting her.
They're in their classrooms and they're safe. They haven't heard or any gunshots or anything, so they're safe. Just concerned.
The lockdown lasted for more than an hour Tuesday and ended with two juveniles and their two airsoft pistols in police custody. Airsoft pistols can look like guns, but their plastic projectiles are rarely fatal. And while it was a false alarm, the initial report put the school district, police, and families on high alert. One worried mother, Katrina Lowry, waited across the street with a handful of other parents texting their kids.
From where I'm from, this is not a joke, it's not a game. Every time you get a call for a lockdown, it's serious, so...
Lowry and the other moms were checking their phones, and any information, even incorrect information, spreads quickly when parents are scared.
There's a kid with an AK-47 in there.
No.
There's a what?
With an AK-47.
Inside the school?
Yes.
Yes.
She just got that from her daughter.
Really?
There was no AK-47, and never was, but these parents easily imagined the worst-case scenario. As they waited for news, police were 2 miles away over the railroad tracks on Billings' south side. That's where law enforcement eventually located the two suspects. At a press conference later in the day, Billings Police Chief Rich St. John could not confirm if the two suspects were ever headed to or were inside the high school, which is what a school resource officer originally reported that initiated the school lockdown.
That got officers headed that direction pretty quickly. Shortly thereafter, there was information that those individuals were in fact in Pioneer Park, which diverted our resources over there.
He said following that, police officers returned to the school when a staff member claimed to see a male juvenile with what he believed to be a handgun. Law enforcement at one point detained a young man who matched the description of one of the suspects, but he was later released. Eventually, police received information that led them to the south side of Billings. St. John said he believed two senior high school students were driving to one of the students' homes. He said one of the suspects was in touch with his mom, which helped BPD track them down. According to St. John, they apprehended the two young men in a car on Monroe Street. St. John said communication between teachers, school administration, and officers was good, and 30-some local, state, and federal officers searched the school twice. Billings Public Schools Superintendent Greg Upham, for his part, said he was in contact with staff, police, parents, media, and other administrators.
The best thing right now is no one was hurt. That's absolutely the win.
The school followed a revised class schedule and a normal dismissal time after the lockdown ended at 2 p.m. Upham said the school called in counselors in case students and staff needed support.
We'll learn from it. I'm sure we'll learn that there are communication pieces that went very well and some that may not have. As far as the training goes, we'll do a full debrief with the police department and our entire district. And communication is the challenge with this, and so we'll work to grow from that.
St. John agreed communication can be a challenge. He said police were operating off their main radio channel, which ties it up for other calls.
If you were listening to your scanner between then and now, you would have heard call after call after call after call going out. Those are all calls that were being held. So essentially, we had no or very few officers left to take care of the rest of the issues with the city. Now, the afternoon shift was called in early.
He said overall, the different agencies coordinated and communicated well, which showed him that training is paying off. He also said that BPD would hold a debrief to pinpoint areas of improvement. The status of the two suspects is so far unclear. St. John said he did not know if they would be charged or if they even did anything illegal. And it may be left up to the school administration. Kayla DeRoche, Yellowstone Public Radio News.
And that's what's happening in Montana today. Check in with Montana Public Radio's Montana Evening News for updates on the news of the day. For Yellowstone Public Radio News, I'm Jess Sheldahl. We'll have another episode of The Worm for you early birds tomorrow morning.
The Worm is produced by Jess Sheldahl for Yellowstone Public Radio. Theme music composed and recorded by Zach Jones at Rapscallion Recording. Meadowlark Call captured by Jay McGowan for the Macaulay Library. Partial funding for The Worm is provided by the Greater Montana Foundation, encouraging communication on issues, trends, and values of importance to Montana. More information about The Worm is available at ypradio.org.